Okay, people, so we got a special echo chamber coming at you early this week, right? Thanks to my girl Andrea. I take a look at this real interesting new, what category you put it, a thriller, horror, but it's crazy. But so we got that, and we speak to the director and writer. It's great. So people, let's get it popping. Right. So let's start things off and we'll get into the film. People, The Manifestation. Okay, so we have a new Vision Films joint called The Manifestation. It is written and directed by Gert Heiterbrugge. The film is produced by Eric Mahilia, Zach Runge, and Ross Van Dwaar. It is executive produced by Kelly James Clark and Sid Jansama Jr. and co-produced by Brittany Ward. Drew Denton handles the music, Tyler Grimm cinematography. It's edited by Leu Ramaker. Brittany Ward took care of casting. Erica Pinero was production design. Art direction is Jen DeMint. Costume design is Casey Grandana. So our cast, we have got Stephen is played by Jack Kesey. Veronica is played by Inbar Lavi. Michael is played by Usman Ali. We've got Diane, played by Rachel Sullivan. Lara is played by Mara Canyon. Richard is played by Jonathan Lee West. Benny is played by Nikita Turov. The bank teller is played by Ashley Marie Jones. Tammy, the truck driver, is played by Gian Taylor. Security guard is played by Muir Gale. The receptionist is played by Katie O'Neill. Delivery man is David Stoob. And the waitress is Incha Reed. So the gist of the story is Stephen, an unsuccessful day trader, is at the end of his rope after a series of bad trades wipes out his savings. He turns to his life coach, Michael, who teaches Stephen how to manifest his inner voice, tapping into hidden powers. Stephen's mental tool manifests as Veronica, a younger version of his wife, Ronnie, that only Stephen can see. The free-spirited Veronica hands Stephen winning trades, putting him on the path to fulfilling his dreams. Ronnie is delighted with her husband's newfound success until she discovers the secret behind his successes, and that Stephen has been secretly trading with Ronnie's student loans. As Stephen's relationship with his mental tool drives a wedge in his marriage, he begins to question whether Veronica is a mental tool or a manipulative force with a mind and powers of its own. Stephen desperately seeks answers from Michael in a bid to keep his marriage and mind intact before his muse costs him everything. So this is an interesting one, right? Because I feel with the name of the film, and when you see the poster, you straight up think it's going to be this kind of horror film, right? But that kind of body possession, that kind of thing. But this, it has a different feel to it. Like, we open up and Stephen is just, his trades have just gone to shit, right? Just losing everything, right? And when he's on this call with Michael, you're just like, oh dear, oh dear. Because it's just like, you know, that typical guru bullshit talk. You know, you see those people, those supposed motivational speakers and all of that. And it's just like, did you envision winning? Oh, yes, I envisioned winning, Michael. And you're just like, I mean, if that's really it, everyone would be winning. Not many people envision themselves losing everything, right? So you're just hearing this nonsense and you're just like, oh man, this dude is fucked, right? Then his wife comes home. Well, no, she's leaving, right? She's leaving for school. So he's kind of lying to her. So you just, from the gate, you realize, yeah, this isn't going to go well. Right, there's way too many secrets and lies here. And that's the thing. So he's given this pep talk by Michael to, you know, use a muse, right? They're supposedly in the training they originally had, you know, that was part of it. So he does that and things start to change, right? Now, cut into all of this, we're getting these flashbacks, right? So flashbacks of when Stephen went on this first course held by Michael, right? And on that course, he meets Veronica. And she's like, oh, but you can call me Ronnie. So we're like, huh, okay. But, you know, there's a slight difference, right? It's a younger version of his wife. And we are, you know, so we're seeing him getting into this whole trading lot, as well as the connections he's made with Ronnie, right? So that's all very interesting. It's also interesting the fact that she no longer does what he's doing. So what happened there? What got her to step away, right, and study law? What's changed here? So we see all of this and just this whole implosion of Stephen and Ronnie's lives because of the lies and, you know, the scheming, the trading, and him kind of, you know, now using this new system. He's like, I've got a new system. Right, I've got a new set, which if anyone tells you that shit, then yeah, you're just like, no, there's no system, son. Like, even top level traders and bettors, they all just say, look, you can study stuff, right? You can, you know, try and understand the shifts and peaks and twists of this all. But there's no sure way to always win. The only time you're always winning is if literally you have inside info, you know, and then you might go to jail. I mean, if you get caught, and the chances are you will. So yeah, it's all just so suspect. But I think we do get a good I think emotional receipt from our characters. And I think that is portrayed pretty well. I do always, with these kind of things, you do question, right? Because sometimes something happens so egregious, you're just like, would they even still be together at this point? Right? Who's really staying? Now, obviously, there are people that do. We know this. But what percentage is that? Because you just feel, man, like, I feel that person, they'd be over at this point. Right? So there is that. But everything else, you know what I mean? It's done pretty well. I just think there are some like bits of biz. I think it's the, well, there's something that happens towards the end. It's the ease of all of that coming together. But then it's just Steven's, the way he goes into all of this, right? The way he's, there's, I mean, he might be deluded, but there will be an understanding of the trades and the money and what he's got and just the volatility of it all. But, and he does seem just real lax. But I thought the end was very interesting here. The end was very interesting because it's, or it makes you wonder what has just happened. Because what we see, there's something we know from the film, right? Involving Ronnie. Something we know. What she's doing, let's say. But we also know what he's been manifesting. So you're just like, oh, what is happening? What's happening? And that was super interesting. It does kind of, we are left on this kind of cliffhanger. It does make you wonder if Gert has an idea for a sequel, you know, but I did like the ambiguity of that. I thought that was interesting. I would say the prop used in one scene, it didn't necessarily sound convincing, right? That was just a bit like, that doesn't sound right. But yeah, everything else was pretty good. And especially when you think this is Garrett's feature directorial debut. He's directed a TV show. You know, he's written, you know, produced, he's done other stuff, but this is the first feature he's directed. So it's not a bad job at all. Definitely a lot to think about here. Definitely a lot to think about. So yes, the manifestation will be hitting VODs on the 19th of March. So mark it down on the calendar, people. 19th of March, The Manifestation. Okay, so making his feature directorial debut, it was a pleasure to sit down with Gert Heterbusch. Really interesting people. I think you're going to enjoy this one. So let's go. Okay, people. So today I am joined by Gert Heterbusch, who is the writer director of The Manifestation. Gert, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Kevin. Really appreciate your interest.
Hey, no worries, man. Like, this was an interesting feature. Mm-hmm. Right. I think the way you approach things, uh-huh. especially the way you end things, uh-huh. right? But this is your feature directorial debut.
Right. For a feature. Yeah. I've done.
Yeah. Some. Yeah. Because yeah. you've done TV, mm-hmm. right? You've written a feature, but
right.
yeah, this is the first time behind the camera on something yeah. this scale. So mm-hmm. what was that experience like? You know, was it what you expected it to be?
Well, it's a lot of work. You know, I mean, if you're the screenwriter, you can hand this off to somebody else and, you know, I mean, a director, it's not like the producer, first one in, last one out, but, you know, in indie filmmaking, it might as well be, right? I mean, the director is also the producer. So, but I really appreciated the opportunity to, like, being able to interpret my own script instead of handing it off to somebody and hoping it'll be interpreted the way you would like. But yeah, I mean, you're involved a lot longer than obviously if you're a screenwriter. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved working with the actors. Loved the post process, you know, like to see how this starts gelling. And then later on, like working with the composer and see what they bring in. This was the very first time that I edited something without a temp track. Normally what I do is, you know, you get a temp track and then you give it to a composer, or that's what I do anyway. But then, you know, you kind of set the composer up for an impossible task, because you can take any track you like for a temp track.
And yeah.
Like, you know, and then you go to your composer and it's like, how am I supposed to match this? You know, this is like, $1 million budget project. So this time I thought, okay, I'm not going to fall in love with any temp track. I'm going to edit it the way I think it works. You know, that, I mean, just like I look at it and like, do I feel it? Do I feel it without music? You know, because music is a very easy cue to feel like this or that way. So I'm just going to have the scene do it for me. And if I thought, yeah, I'm feeling it, then I moved on to the next scene and, you know, edited the whole film together. And then I gave it to a composer, auditioned composers. And then I found one in L.A. Whose take I really liked. Actually, I liked several takes, but it just, you know, you can only choose one. And then I just started seeing what he would come up with. You know, it was like Christmas. You know, all of a sudden, you know how it goes when you add music to a scene. It's like chemistry. All of a sudden, you know, these two elements that were inert before, you know, they do something new that you hadn't expected. So, yeah, I loved not working with a temp track this time and just having the composer come up with something and then direct the composer if it was something that, you know, that I didn't have in mind. But more often than not, they came back with something that was surprising in a really good way. You know what I mean? So yeah, I loved all that. And I tried to do, I tried to work the same way with actors, for example, or with, you know, with the crew. I mean, I'm a writer director, right? So I'm not a shooter director. So I'm more dependent on my cinematographer than a shooter director would be. And I'm well aware of that. And I'm also well aware in indie filmmaking, you have less checks and balances, because it just, you know, if you have a writer director, it just, you can do your own vision and there's no studio people telling you, no development hell telling you like, no, we want this scene or, you know, we want it this or that way. I mean, it's good and it's bad, right? It's good in the sense that you can just make what you want, but sometimes those checks and balances are actually helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and they save you from mistakes. So I try to bend over backwards as a director to be flexible and to beat the page on the set. So not to fall in love too much with, you know, like my own writing. Maybe, you know, these actors can come up with something that's better than what I wrote. And at a certain moment, I saw that these actors that we had, they started knowing their character so well I mean, even Imbar asked me questions about the character that I couldn't answer, like, you know, their favorite music or something, or like what music would fit with this character versus the other, because she played a dual role. Yeah. She played Veronica and Ronnie. Things like that. And, you know, she had studied these characters so intensely that made me more open to experimentation on set to see, like, okay, how would you do this? You know what I mean? Whereas maybe if I had not been a writer director and not be so hyper aware of, like, you know, those pitfalls, you know, that you don't have these checks and balances, maybe I would have just gone ahead and no, let's do it my way. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. Yeah, I really tried to be as flexible as I could while still keeping that, you know, obviously you need to have the spine of the story, you need to have that vision, because otherwise it goes off track. But yeah, with the composer, with the actors, with the crew, I just tried to be as flexible as possible as a director. So I guess you'd have to talk to them, like, did I do that to a fault, or did I get the balance right? So.
Well, I think, you know, being the first thing feature you've directed, I feel it makes sense, right? You want to go, this is my voice,
right?
But to not pay attention to the experienced people in the room,
right?
You know what I mean? That can be a big mistake as well. So it's finding that middle ground. And right. You know, it sounds like you approached it in a way that, you know, worked. And it, I mean, it did work from the finished thing, you know what I mean? So yeah.
It doesn't seem like it went against my voice. I mean, I'm not going against my voice. If that were the case, then I would say, no, let's not do that. It was all within the margins of, like, what I thought I wanted to say with it. I'm really happy with that approach.
Yeah, I like the approach with the music as well, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think music can oftentimes be a crutch, right? Oh, yeah. Because I always think, if this was on mute,
right,
I want to know what the emotions are just by watching what the actors are doing, by hearing the actor's delivery, right? I don't need sad music to be like, oh, it's a sad scene.
Yeah,
right?
I know that straight away. The easiest cue, the music. And it's, I remember years ago, I said, you know, next to a Polish professor, he taught in Minnesota. I think he's retired now. I kept in contact with him afterwards, but he was a film professor. I didn't know all that when I sat next to him. But I was on the way back from Amsterdam to Los Angeles, where I lived then. And we had a stopover somewhere in the Midwest. So we flew over the Atlantic together. And he had a whole bag of Polish sausages that had to be eaten before we went through customs. So he just sausages. And so I got to know the guy, lovely man. And he was watching movies on mute. That's just what he did. And he said he was a film professor. He always watched movies on mute. And only if he thought they were really interesting would he turn on the sound. But he was just like, he was just judging it by, you know, like the cinematic, the visuals and nothing else. So I thought, I don't know, maybe that stuck with me, but I just, that kind of dovetails with what you just said now, that it has to work in itself without music. I agree. I agree. And I love films that just have only like gnat sound, you know? Like,
music,
and it just, like, what does that do?
So. Yeah, I think that is really interesting, right? Yeah. Now, like, there's films with really great scores. Like, I really enjoyed, like, Tenet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not I wouldn't say it's necessarily an emotional score.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's not telling you this is sad, this is happy, this is mysterious. It's more like themic, you know. And so I think that is always interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think at least from, you know, I mean, the reviews are coming in now, so it's too early to say. But at least one that I read really, you know, called out the music, like a Sephardic electronic score or something. I mean, they thought it worked very well, so that was great to see.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, like going in, what did you envision might be like the toughest part of the whole process? And then once it was done, what actually was that toughest part?
Well, I think the toughest part is always, I think the toughest part is the script. Is always the script. I mean, it's like having done everything now and being a screenwriter before this, I thought writing was difficult. I still think writing is difficult. And I still think it's the most difficult part. But the most important part is getting the financing. Or actually, the most important part, I would say the most important part would, I say it wrong, the most important part would be the script, but the most difficult part is the financing. That's what I would say. Just that was hard to get the financing. But that ended up working out. It's hard, every phase is hard. If you're an indie filmmaker, every phase you kind of have to. You're a business person. In the beginning, you're focused on the script. Okay, that's kind of like my wheelhouse. So, I can do that, even though it's very difficult. After that, you get into production or pre-production and production, and you're surrounding yourself with people who know what you don't. You know what I mean? And if the people are good, then it just this thing keeps chucking along. Every time you're in a completely new, I mean, you just have to invent how these things go. You have to find out, like, okay, so now we got this movie. Now what? You know what I mean? Now we have to get it distributed. How do we get it to distributors? Like, who do we know? Who, et cetera. It just every phase, in the post-production is all very technical, obviously, but then the distribution phase is also very difficult, to find a distributor. So it just and it's all completely. It has such range and scope. I mean, you kind of need a business where you can just kind of go to somebody and say, okay, can you do this for me? But it's just you, or it's like a very small core group of people in indie filmmaking. So you have to invent all this while you have to learn how to fly while you're falling. It's a cliche, I know, but it's true. But the filmmaking process, it just calls on so many different parts of your of everything that you are. So
Had your
I think
experience
that's the most challenging.
Okay. Yeah. Had your previous experience like producing and writing kind of helped in a way, given an understanding of some of the aspects?
Yeah, I have an understanding, but having an understanding and having the contact is very different. And I'd done a movie before that I wrote and produced with a good friend of mine, but that was a long time ago, and things had changed. And so it's like there was no path to go on anymore, because it's just you have to hack a new path. You know what I mean? It's just like through the jungle, kind of. It's not like you can call up all these people and say, "Hey, let's get the band back together and let's do this." It's just like, everything is its own beast. It's its own, yeah.
Well, especially because in 2003 there weren't streaming platforms.
Right.
You know
Right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So it really has changed. There was no AI. There was just so many things that
Yeah,
are
and
now.
I think probably the rate. Of filmmaking is like of change. It's really speeding up now. Who knows where AI goes? I don't know, but it's just like, I always thought was so cool. What was so cool about filmmaking is that it's collaborative, and that I mean, you can paint by yourself, you can write by yourself, you can compose by yourself. You can't make a movie by yourself, not a movie of any scope. But maybe AI will change that. Maybe we can just make something, go from text to video in a couple of years. I mean, the individual scenes are already there. When I've tried it, I can't seem to make it do what I want it to do. So you have to be so specific with the language.
Yes.
So the stuff that I come up with is nothing like the demos. And the only reason I've tried it is because, I'm like, have we just been replaced? I need to see how this works. You know what I mean? Mm. And I'm like, oh no, it's a little too early for prime time yet, this software. But, that was yesterday. Today it may be different, and tomorrow we may have been replaced. I don't know. It's going so fast.
Yeah, do you kind of worry that may happen? Like, there's thoughts I have on the whole subject, but yeah, I'm interested to know what you your kind of views on this.
Well, I think, and I've talked to several, a bunch of people about this, and some of them, they say, well, human intelligence will win out, over artificial intelligence. Yeah. And it just feels like spin to me. It feels like what I see when I look at AI is like I see parasitical software, so it's not really artificial intelligence. I mean, the AI is taking human projects, human, it's learning from them, taking from, actually not learning, just learning, it's copying from them. Yeah. without paying the makers, and then using its, what it learns from it against those makers. You know what I mean? So now they have competition from something that they have inadvertently created. And that's that has the potential to suck the life force out of them in terms of like income, because it just, if other people can do what skilled people used to be able to do, but they can just do it by typing it in and, anybody can now make this, that takes away the whole economic basis for, what filmmakers do. So, I mean, it's too early to say it's going that way, but it certainly looks like it's going that way. It's interesting. AI is interesting. I do think it's parasitical software. I mean, it's using, like what I said, it's using what people have made without their permission and then using it to compete against those same people.
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel that we've always had plagiarism, right?
Sure. Yeah.
That's always been a thing.
Yeah.
And there's always been those, like back in the day, it was straight to VHS, straight to DVD, mm-hmm. films and TV shows, yeah. and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The B movie, right? Yeah. That kind of thing. I think that's what AI will be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be able to make something, but it's not going to be an Oppenheimer, right? It's not going to be a Tenet. It's not going to be Inception. What I mean? It can do something on a base level, but I don't think it necessarily will have that heart and soul to it, that magic.
Yeah.
I think it's like when you give someone that maybe isn't a native speaker of something, they'll have an understanding of the language and they can put together some text, but it's not going to read the same as a native speaker,
mm-hmm.
does it? And I kind of feel
that's
what AI will be. It will do some stuff for sure, right? Yeah. It will allow, you'll have some networks and things utilizing it, but mm-hmm. those shows will never be like incredible. They're not going to be the shows like, Game of Thrones, Succession, people are talking about and being like, oh my god, did you watch this? It will just be something like mm-hmm. I don't know, Love is Blind, right? You know what I mean?
I hear you. It's and you may be right. I hope you're right. But I also think that studios, you know, like the executives, they're not looking for those really great works of art. They're looking for good enough. You know, what can we use that people will accept and this is good enough? You know what I mean? So on the other hand, you know, it may be true. I hope that you're right, that that they just will make AI will be B movies, because it will always be derivative of what has been put in, you know, so it can't be like original in that sense. But then, you know, I look back at like, and I may not be completely up on my art history, but I think painting really changed when photography was invented. You know, it became abstract and it went all kinds of directions, just because, you know, now there was this thing that could do what painters used to do, you know, like, I mean, make something very realistic. So now painting changed. So I'm wondering, like, how will human filmmaking change now that we have this AI technology? You know what I mean? So,
I think they're, you know, valid points. I think what we have seen is once people hit a certain level, right, it can take other people a minute to get up to there. But once other people reach that level, we then see this next jump.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, like the UFC is a, like, mm-hmm. I use the UFC as an example. If you watch like mixed martial arts, like uh-huh. Joanna Jędrzejczyk was the second strawweight champion, and she was dominant. Man, she kicked ass. She was so good for a good few years. And then everyone around her kind of got up to that level. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you just saw this new evolution in female MMA.
Uh-huh.
And I think that could be the thing, right? Yeah. That, as you said, like when photography came, art changed, right? But it kind of pushed people to then hit that next tier. And uh-huh. I think that's what we could see.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it could become completely different, but, you know, don't know.
Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Man, we live in interesting times.
And
like, who knew, you know, how fast this would go with AI? It just like, and how fast it spread, you know, it's like it's out there on the web, and within days, weeks, certainly months, you know, schools are like wondering, okay, how do we deal with this in terms of our syllabi and how we teach and, you know, companies are incorporating it into their software, and just like this. Yeah, I think the rate of change is just like going crazy.
Well, I think that's everything right now, right? Uh-huh. Like, I mean, this generation, because you just think our parents, there was black and white TV for ages, black and white film before you got to color.
Yeah.
Then years before you went to flat screen TVs. Uh-huh. Right. Like growing up, you know, it was VHS, Betamax.
Uh-huh.
Then you had Laserdisc, which
I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah. Then it went to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after a bit, you went to Blu-ray.
Uh-huh.
But then things, you know, you got like cassette, vinyl, MP3. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it got faster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the way things have evolved in the last decade have been kind of crazy. Just these new things that are coming up. So, you know, AI kind of seems to be a bit like when the internet first came, right? And social media, there's people who just post like, just bought a pizza. Yay. Now it's just like, have you seen what's happening in the world and this and blah, blah, blah. And it, you know what I mean? People are utilizing it so different.
Yeah.
But it's not been that long. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That we've just seen this kind of craziness, the way everything has adapted and moved. And I think that's what AI kind of is. You know, it's this generation's internet, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, obviously, you know, Veronica is an AI, but something, right? Yeah. There's something going on.
Yeah, yeah. So I tried not to like spell it out or even pick sides in the making, because I'd like some people to say, no, she's this. Or, no, she's that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, is she some kind of, like what you said, AI? Is she just in his mind? Is this psychological? And we're seeing what he thinks is there, right? Or is this supernatural? Is this like something coming in from another realm, from a supernatural realm that's now like, you know, taking over his life, you know? So is it mind, or is it, you know, matter? Is it psychological or is it supernatural? So, and I talked, you know, at length at this with my cinematographer, that I would like it to be, I'd like both sides to be able to make a cogent point. Like, yeah. No, it's psychological. Well, no, it's supernatural. So, and we'll see if we've been successful in like walking that line. You know what I mean? Because it would have been easy to just like go one way or the other. But now, like, but you know, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think it's I thought it was very interesting the way that line was walked in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like with the writing,
mm-hmm.
did it follow consciously, like to be able to walk that line? Or what did you have to kind of go, but actually, no, I have to change that because it sounds too much in this direction?
Well, that was later in the rewrites. I would have like pulled back on some and, you know, added others in order to, you know, keep that balance right. But, you know, if you're given to believe in the supernatural, which I do, then you might be on, you know, on one side. Whereas if you don't believe in that and you think, no, this is psychological, I wanted that to also be, you know, like a possibility of interpretation.
Mm.
So, yeah, I did try to keep both instead of, you know, veering to one side and, you know, spelling it out. I mean, I am spelling it out in some ways, but then I'm also like countering it with something, you know what I mean? So, and that's why, and maybe people want to be told more like, no, it's this. And those people might not be happy with this balance because they just want to know, like, what is Veronica? Like, tell me what Veronica is, you know what I mean? but, you know, I try to keep that interpretation open, but I do want people to wonder like, what is Veronica?
Yeah. I mean, I did like the ambiguity,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's just, you know, this Trojan horse has kind of invaded this situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, what in what capacity is it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And is this something that's taken over his life? Is it something foreign, or is it something that's just his own mind? You know what I mean? That he could. Yeah, I just, you know, I'd love to for people to like we are doing right now, to just, you know, take a position and say, no, she's this, and then be able to to make a case. And, you know, is it psychological? Every time other people see her, because in the beginning it's just him.
Yes.
Right? She sees her. So it's like, okay, it's clearly, you know, this has got to be, you know, psychological. But then other people start seeing her. It's like, how is that possible? You know what I mean? But you can still make a case that it's psychological, because every time that somebody else sees her, he's also in the scene.
Mm.
You know, Stephen is. So it's possible that Stephen is thinking that other people see her. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But you can also, you know, argue that she is a supernatural being that is just, you know, like a Trojan horse. He's, you know, taking, you know, has entered his life and now taking up more and more as he thinks it's just in his mind. But meanwhile, it's much more dangerous and much bigger.
But you also have that thing, right? I believe, oh, how is it? Kind of like in that, in a cult kind of, you know, sometimes like that religious
right.
element where someone can believes in something so much, they can kind of project that belief onto someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that too. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why it's so interesting.
Yeah. So I like the title now. It had to grow on me a little bit, the manifestation, but originally the title when we were shooting was called Veronica.
So,
but the distributor thought the manifestation would be a better title and they were convincing to me. But yeah, you can talk about levels of manifestation, you know? This whole, like, you know, the whole world of the crypto money and the world of motivational speakers and these like quote unquote prophets, it does have a religious feel to it, and the followers of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did try to go for that religious feel of that, of that whole world, where he's learned how to manifest.
Mm. You know? Well, especially as you could say, Ronnie is a fallen sheep. Fallen sheep? That's not the right thing, is it? Lost a flock. You know, she used to be,
where I met, you know, at one of these gatherings, but she's clearly moved on since then, whereas he has doubled down on it.
Yeah,
you know, there's a chasm between them, which shows up during the story that is detrimental to their marriage. It's like, and then Veronica becomes a wedge in their marriage. But yeah, in the beginning, I mean, she knows where this kind of thinking comes from because that's where they met. Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, the manifestation. There's so many different kind of contexts that it does make it interesting. Like with that conversation with the title, how locked in, you know, were things? Like if you really were like, no, not the manifest, could you get the old title? Like, or were they kind of going, no, this is what it's gonna be, you have to just like it?
Well, this actually goes back to I think what we started with when I talked about like a certain flexibility that I have to working with the professionals that come on board.
Mm.
You know? So, I know what my vision is, but here I get to work with these really, skilled professionals, and they'll have a point of view. So I need to consider that. And that carried through to the distribution, you know, like to finding a distributor. So I have a distributor whose job it is to distribute this film. If they think this title will help them do that more than that title, then I need to consider that. I need to think like, okay, is this a non-negotiable? Or is the vision still intact? And it just, if they think they can do better with that title, then they can go with that title, you know? So in that sense, I was flexible about it and not sold on that title. I didn't think the essence of everything was that title. You know what I mean? Now, looking back on it, it has grown on me. And I think, it works.
I think Veronica would have been fine. Right.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like, I mean, and for the longest time, I thought it was cool. It was different. Also, when you Google the name, there's no competition. There's no other movies that are called that. So it's like it would immediately have stood out. At the end of the day, I thought, you know, here are professionals who know something about the business that I don't, and they think this is an issue. So, yeah. I decided, okay. Not overnight, not like, oh, okay. But okay, they have a case. Let's go.
Yeah, no, I can see why they, you know, there may have been that push to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But Because it does, I think it makes it easy. I think calling it Veronica, I think there's a visual element in the title which helps it pop, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's, I would have done it like VR hyphen, Ronnie hyphen CA.
Okay.
Right. But then have the Ronnie as if it's like in front of the Veronica.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? To show that it's two different
titles, these dual roles. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I think that's a visual element to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's like, hey, everything, as Johan Cruyff, who was, you know, famous soccer player in my home country. He passed, as I'm sure you know, but he used to say every upside is a downside, you know. Everything has, you know, it just, yeah, you change the title and you lose that part, but hopefully, you know, overall the manifestation is a good title. So
it is.
I mean, it does say what it is, you know what I mean? With Veronica, is like, if you don't know anything, it's just like you hear Veronica, it's like, okay, but the manifestation, it gives more of of a sense of what you're dealing with.
Yes, you get the interest of, you know, purveyors of a certain genre. Mm-hmm. Like horror fans might see that name and go, oh, okay, I'll check. Let me take a look at that. Right. Where Veronica, it's intriguing, but what is it?
Right.
Is it fantasy? Is it drama? Is it a thriller? Is it a, you know what I mean? It's just like, what box does this fit into?
Right.
But
creeping in here. One sec.
Yeah.
The sun is creeping in here. Maybe I'll quick close something. One sec. I'll be right back.
Yeah, no worries. Close this.
We can keep on talking.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's interesting because because oftentimes you see a film and it's like, then you realize, oh, it used to be called something else. But it's like, what are those discussions, right? Why was that changed? So I think it's interesting hearing from your point of view what kind of goes into that, you know, those conversations.
Yeah. And I could have stuck to my guns and said, no, it's Veronica. And then, you know, we'd be talking about Veronica. Or maybe we wouldn't be talking now because you might not have found the film. I don't know. Maybe you found the film because of the, I don't know. But it just, you know, it goes back to, being flexible on the non-essentials, I think.
One thing, before we get to that, the casting.
Yeah.
There's, I think there was a film that I watched recently called Demise.
Okay.
It was a really good film. And I spoke to the director. What's her name again? Yara Estrada Low. Yara Estrada Low. And in her film, there was a kind of a double role, right? And it was it was played very well. Right, the actress, she really nailed those two different personalities.
Yeah.
Right. So when you were doing this, what kind of how easy was it, you know, kind of working with Imbara, you know, to kind of give her what the differences with Ronnie and Veronica were, you know, that different personality?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think other than them looking the same way in the beginning, you know, because Veronica manifests as an early version of right? This is what Ronnie looked like at the conference where they met. Inbar understood, you know, immediately, like the ruthlessness of Veronica and the dangerousness of Veronica. And She suggested the red hair of Veronica, which I thought was a great idea. Whereas Ronnie had moved on from that. I remember Imbar asking me, what are, like, if there's a song for each, for each of them, who would you associate with what song, right? And, you know, I have to think about that one, because it's just, that was, you know, when I realized, okay, she's getting to know this character more than I know this character, and I wrote this character, you know what I mean? So that's lovely to see when that happens. But, you know, she told me, I thought about it, and I thought, well, Ronnie, I think she would be the song, John Legend, All of Me. That's Ronnie. Whereas Veronica, I think, would be, let's see, what was the song?
There? I don't feel sympathy for the devil. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lady Gaga, Bad Romance. That's what I said to her. But yeah, you can go with that one too, Sympathy for the Devil. So it just, you know, that helped her in, like, okay, this is her and this is her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, she filled that in accordingly. So that was, yeah, she did a lot of research.
It was very distinct, the two. That you couldn't mix up who they were.
No.
And even, I feel, in the flashbacks of early Ronnie, still were very different from Veronica.
Yeah.
Right? So it's that, you know, being able to hone and really drill down into younger, older self, and then just that whole flip of personality.
It's just
there's a skill to that, and she really nailed it.
I loved seeing it come to life, you know, her interpretation of it. So
like, do you, you know, with when you're writing characters and you know, that kind of thing, do you oftentimes think about, like, reference points for those characters? Be like, okay, yeah, I think this character would, these are the kind of books that character would read, or they kind of like, you know, this person from this film.
Yeah, you can have somebody in mind. Actually, I think that's helpful if you do have somebody in mind. Somebody, you know, real somebody. I mean, you can have somebody in mind who is not an actor. Somebody out of your own environment that you think, like, yeah, they would be like that person, you know. And then, you know, initially you can go through all kinds of, you know, questions about that character, just, you know. You know, the script will show this much of the character above water, but then underneath the water is the most part of the biggest part of the iceberg. So you need to know all that in order to have that part that shows, you know, be, you know, kind of realistic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You ask yourselves any question you could possibly ask yourself about their social life and about, you know, dreams and fears. And now, obviously, you can also get lost in that kind of research, you know. I ask myself those questions in order to develop the character. And then especially in the rewrites, when you realize this character needs to be strengthened, or this, you know, like this, it's not gelling yet. So, and then you have to ask yourself those questions again, like, you know, what does she want out of life? What does Ronnie want? What is, you know?
Sure. Do you think the song thing is something that you'll take forward into, you know, future films?
The what thing?
Like thinking of like a song that kind of personifies.
I might, because that's actually, I mean, music can get to places where nothing else can it can touch, you know. So, I mean, I did learn a long time ago that you know, like during the writing, it's or not necessarily during the writing, but during the brainstorming, like when you're working on the treatment and you're not actually writing the script yet. You're just doing treatment and you just like, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and you have an idea, or you're driving and you just quick record an idea, you know. During that phase, it's helpful to sometimes have a soundtrack that you've downloaded and you just play it, and it just it's kind of mind expanding, and it at least, you know, you may not know the story yet, but you may know like what the genre is or the feel of it. So when you listen to those kind of soundtracks and those songs, certain things will bubble up in the creative process that just fit that genre. So in that sense, yeah, music is what I already used and it's helpful. But what her question did was, you know, you associate a song with a character. I might also start doing that in the future, you know, actually do that. And then just like really hone in on the writing of that character as you listen to that song. I thought it was a fascinating question from her.
Yeah, because when you think about it, you know, you can usually pinpoint, you know, events in life to music.
Right.
You know, when you hear a certain song, you'd be like, yeah, oh man, yeah, I remember I was doing this when that happened, or I just graduated with that song came out. And there's so many different things. It kind of
sounds of your own life, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So I think I will use that in future writing. So probably in the rewriting phase. So once you have something on paper, how do I now develop this character? If you then like assign a song to them that you think, okay, this would fit them, and then see what else comes up that kind of fleshes them out more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. So who did you cast first, Inbar or Jack?
Inbar we cast first,
right?
And then Jack, and then Usma.
Okay, so like, you know, because there's good chemistry between everyone. Yeah. Like, how do you work on that kind of thing? Like, you know, do you give the actors like prompts, tasks, or do you just leave it to them to, you know, build a rapport?
I left it to them to build the rapport with each other, and just, I mean, you don't know how that's going to go. You just don't, you know. And you can't like see what the chemistry, I mean, maybe on a high budget film you can do that and just fly in actors and you know, have them audition and see how they have chemistry with one another. I don't know how, to what extent you can do all that before you actually, you know, sign and say, okay, you get the role. But on an indie, there's just you don't have the time or the money to do it that way. So you hope, just from having seen their projects and having seen how they work, that this could work. And then if it actually does work, it's like, okay, thank you, you know. But you don't know that, you know. You just I was very grateful that it did work. So, that was the order: Inbar, Jack, and then Usman.
Right, right. Yeah, no. I thought the chemistry works, man.
Yeah.
I thought it works well.
Oh, thank you. I think so.
Like, what did you know about day trading before this film?
I knew things about day trading from secondhand. I mean, I had been educated by people how it worked. And those were like really, dedicated people. So, I mean, I could have then done it myself. I didn't get into it like Steven is in the film. But I had everything that I wrote about day trading, like checked and double checked by people who were doing it, so that I said I got everything right about it, the pressure that they're under. But here's another thing with, you know, there's so much software, so much day trading software, that it'll tell you like, you know, in the last 80 years, if you have a movement like this, then the next movement is this. Yes. Well, that may have been true in the last 80 years, but it's not true today. So it's just this software. It's like AI. It's just like it only goes up till now, but it doesn't go. It can't see the next second. So there's all this pressure, no matter what system you have, like whether it's a software or, you know, some kind of system that you have in your mind. It's just all this pressure. Like, will I make the right call? You know what I mean? And there could be a lot of, you know, like money, you know, sitting on that call. So that's like high pressure just in your living room. You know what I mean? Day trading is just high pressure. And I thought it's a fantastic environment for a story with high stakes. You know what I mean? And it's relatable even if you're not into day trading. But yeah, I know. So I personally know people who are in day trading, and they walked me through it and enough that I could write this. So that I felt I had researched this character, and I could get into his mind. Like, okay, now what? You know, and feel the pressure of a lost trade, like a big one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it comes across. Like, was there ever a moment where it could have been something else, right, other than day trading?
Oh, it could be something else. It could be anything in which you have high pressure and people come up with, like, mental structures in order to handle the stress. But it happens to be day trading. And you know, there's all kinds of, you know, classes and conferences, and, you know, there's a whole industry around, this type of industry or in this field, that kind of tries to teach you, like, the mental fortitude to make these calls. You know what I mean? It's almost like athletes. And some of this advice is really, like, out there, you know, in terms of, like, creating your own reality. It just, like, you know, you can manifest success.
Yes. You know?
And that always sounded, I don't know. It sounded off to me. It sounded like spin to me. It sounded like some kind of, you know, to put it in theological terms, idolatry to me. It sounded like I thought this is a fantastic arena to come up with, you know. So, and then, you know, the more I learned about that arena, the more I was affirmed that, yeah, I should set a story in this arena. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always that an interesting thing, right? I feel, because, you know, you see these people talking and it's just like, I started with nothing and I worked hard and I got here. You can do the same. Yeah. And it's just like, that's a very simplistic way of looking at things, because you never know what someone else's constraints are. Right. What are the other factors, environmental factors playing on you? Right. You might have some caring duties that you have to do. You might be studying on the side. Right. You know, you might be depressed. You might have an eating disorder. You might have, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different things that could be happening in the world that could be pulling at your time, could be pulling at your focus. So just because one person can do this one thing in this way doesn't mean that then converts to you being able to do it. Not saying you wouldn't be able to do it, but you find a different way of getting there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the lottery, you know, like you have people who win the lottery, they're there. And those are the ones, you know, that people look at, like, look, they did it. I can do it. You know, like maybe it'll happen to me. So, but you don't see all the people that failed at trying to get there, you know? So yeah, it's the same thing here. You get to see the people who are successful, but, I think that it's highly problematic, that way of thinking, to put it mildly. And I thought, oh, there's a way I can make a story with this. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I feel that's why it was interesting with Richard's part of the story, mm-hmm. you know, because you right. do get to see those other factors.
Right. Right. And then that's also when you start to realize, I didn't close this thing good enough. The sun keeps sneaking up on me. I'm going to sit here for a little bit. That's also when you realize maybe there's something else going on. Maybe this yes. is not mental. And that's like maybe there's something supernatural going on. And all these people are dealing with powers that are way beyond their, you know, what they think they're dealing with. So, yeah. And Richard is the one who kind of opens that can of worms.
But the other interesting thing with all of that is, right, it's because, you know, we've seen, I mean, there's so many documentaries and TV series about it now, right? Yeah. But cults, right? And uh-huh. the people that leave the cult uh-huh. and the way their world kind of collapses, because now that support system, mm-hmm. right, that ideology has gone. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, how do they navigate without it? Like they're right. free, which is great,
yeah,
but they're kind of rudderless now.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know, you can look at Richard as being that. So that's why it was so interesting, because you're just like, oh, I think I've got it now. Oh, but have I?
Yeah.
Oh, what is this? What's going on?
And he's not sure if it was a good thing. I mean, it worked for him, but, you know, he's also like musing about if he could go back, he might, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think that's part of the ambiguity that I tried to, some deliberate ambiguity that I tried to put in. And when Stephen realizes that maybe he's not the one in control, maybe he's being controlled by something. So there's that, like, you know, that balance that I was going for. Definitely pushing it towards like something that is now is beyond, well, literally beyond. Yeah. So it's like, you know, you think it's in the mind, but then after we've dealt with Richard, then you don't know what we're dealing with anymore. So yeah. I just like I did want to have that as like an increasing complication that works its way through the film. And in a way, it's like, you know, you could see it as a Faustian bargain that he has made. You know, I mean, you mentioned that in the song about sympathy for the devil. Right. So it's like, are we dealing with something supernatural here? So I want to have that option in there. So.
Yeah. Now, were you writing this with a thought of a sequel?
Well, I wrote this with, you know, like this, it could stand on its own. I do think that the best stories or the best endings are new beginnings. So yeah. When I look at this ending, I'm thinking, okay, there's another story there, you know, so. Mm-hmm. Like it's possible you could continue this, but I always try in my stories to start with a new beginning and then out, you know. And here is no this is no exception.
Yeah, because I like the ending. Like the ambiguity of the ending, mm-hmm. but it does like it it. Man, it doesn't, you know what I mean? There's so many questions, because uh-huh. it's like what we know Ronnie is doing.
Yeah.
Right. So the ending, is it that? Or is the ending a welcoming back to the fold? Like, what? Like, yeah. There's different connotations you can look at and go, oh.
Yeah. Well, the way I see it is, I mean, he's, there's several, I think the vicious cycle is now like completely round. It's like, it's now a circle. It's like the very thing that got him into, you know, it's a cycle of addiction. Like the very thing that got you into trouble is the thing that you're now looking for to get you out of trouble. Mm. So I mean, he's even happy to see her at the end. You know, he's smiling. Maybe that might be too much of a spoiler alert here. But anyway, so we'll see. I lost my the first part I was going to say.
The circle, the full
circle.
Yeah,
no, yeah, the circle. So it's like, you know, I did want that. I wanted that to be there to kind of show his that he has lost it. You know what I mean? He's now looking for her to get him out after she got him into this place in the first place. You know what I mean? Mm. And there's also, this is what I wanted to say. This is like the idea of giving birth is in the film. So there's like, you know, there's several references to birth and pregnancy. And I think, you know, so she has her pregnancy, which is a secret from him. He is pregnant of an idea, which like becomes flesh. And then there's also the Usman's character, Michael, who's talking about, you know, ideas that you conceive and that then come to term and then that you give birth to, even bad things, you know what I mean? Like cancer.
Yeah.
So he's trying to change the mind of people who are listening about how they think, because what they think will become flesh, basically. And that's, I think, what the ending then kind of really shows. It's like he's given birth to something and an idea that is now incarnated. And it's that vicious cycle that is just, you know, the very thing that he is now glad to see is like I said, it's what got him into that place.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to shut this a little bit better.
Okay.
Go ahead. I can hear you.
All right. So, you know, the film drops on the 19th, right?
Yeah, that's on Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to view it on a big screen? A
few times, yeah. But, you know, I prefer to see it on a... because on a big screen, it's projected, you know, and, you know, projected is, it's always lighter than what you've colored it to be. But that's just like, you know, I'm looking at it from like a coloring perspective. To see it on a big screen, yeah, that's really cool, obviously. But I think it also works on a small screen. I mean, this is not something that has great like landscape vistas or something. It's a contained story. Mm. I think it can work on a small screen. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Definitely does. Like, did you do cast screenings? Have you watched it with, you know, the rest of the crew, as it were?
Yeah, I have. We had a crew screening, which was really fun. I mean, that's so cool to all sit together and watch this. And they now, you know, I mean, I've watched this so many times and just, you know, in the edit and afterwards and all these nips and tucks, but they haven't. So, yeah, it was lovely to see it with them and to hear their reactions. So and then there's going to be another screening here at the school where I teach for the students of this of Calvin University. That's like next week. So that's like a week after it comes out. And then I'll hear what they think, you know. So But yeah, they haven't been involved, obviously. Those are just like if you'd go see it, if you just sneak in any theater and just see what they're talking about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or if they like it. So this is like, this is not crew or anything.
Like what? Yeah, I mean, showing it to your students.
Yeah.
Right.
What? I haven't yet, but yeah. So now that's going to be soon. And we'll see what they say. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how does that feel? Like, is there any trepidation in that?
Oh, yeah. There's always trepidation in having, you know, something that is so close to you. It's like, you know, okay, now like, oh, what do you think? You know, because I can't change it. I mean, this is it at this point. I just hope it connects. So like, I was very excited to see the first reviews about it. But you know, well, you know, they just start trickling in, so it's too early to say what the consensus is. But you know, I was excited about the first ones, and yeah, I'm eager to hear what people think, you know. Because you know, I'm trying to walk this razor's edge, like we talked about, you know, like between different interpretations, and I'll see if it works. I think it, you know, but who am I? I mean, I'm not objective. Other people will now have to tell me if it works. You know what I mean?
No, I honestly yeah. thought it worked. Like, I wouldn't say if I didn't think it worked, I wouldn't be talking about it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to tell you something that I didn't actually feel while mm-hmm. watching it. And yeah, I just thought it was so interesting mm-hmm. having that ambiguity, like mm-hmm. not fully knowing, mm-hmm. you know, what was it? Like, yeah. what's the thing? What's actually going on? Like yeah. that was very, yeah. yeah.
Well, I think that hopefully, I mean, my idea was to create engagement that way, like more engagement because of that. Whereas, I mean, I could have made it easier, simpler, and just give my interpretation. No, this is what she is, you know. Mm. But I don't. You know, I like it when movies make me think and you know, try to put the pieces together. This way or this way. I mean, because you don't, it's not like a puzzle where you see the picture, okay, and now you put the pieces together like the picture. You still have the puzzle, but you don't have the picture. You know, you don't have the example. So people will put it together in different ways.
Yeah.
And I like those kind of films. I like those kind of, like where people yeah. interpret it.
I mean, everyone, let me. Okay. Yeah. Like everyone always talks, you know, to this day. Like at the end of Inception, did the thimble fall or did it continue yeah. spinning? Right. Yeah. Like no one.
It's part of the lore of the film. So it's like, is that bad or is it a good thing? I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Oh man. It's
thank you for naming that as an example. So
yeah, no. Honestly, yeah. It's always just so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like, there's certain things that will spoon feed things to you.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that's just, you know, you just think, ah, man, just don't give me all the information. Let me yeah. come up with my own thing. So yeah. yeah, when people allow you that privilege, it's, yeah. you know, it's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So yeah. I I never liked paint by numbers paintings either.
No, that's not good. But yeah, now, you know, Tuesday is fast approaching.
Yeah, that's right.
The film's going to be out into the yeah. world. So yeah. I guess what's next?
Well, hopefully it'll do well enough that I can go to the investors and say, hey, remember that movie we made? Want to do another one? So, you know, so we'll have to see. Yeah.
mean, do you have ideas for?
Yeah, I have ideas. I have a historical screenplay. I have a kids' screenplay. I have a fantasy adventure. There's not just like one type of a film that I'm just like that I want to make. I've tried lots of different types. So, in terms of writing, I'd love to have this as a runway for more projects. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and behind the camera, you want to do that again?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. It was also, I'd love to have like a larger core team after production. So yeah. During production, fantastic. But after production is like, if you can keep that team, but that takes money because not everybody can, has the time and to put so much effort into this, for such a long time. If I could make this, if I could make this make business sense, that you could just crank these things out like faster and, keep making this as a running production company. Maybe also where students cycle through and where they can learn. I'm looking for that model that could make this sustainable and you could make more, So I'm looking for like a business model that would work. Together with my teaching.
There's a gentleman, a professor I spoke to last year. Mm-hmm. I think it's around about August last year.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Who's working, I believe it's in Chicago.
Okay.
And there's a program at the university and the students are able to make, like, I think there's funding to make like 3 or 4 films each year, kind of thing. And it sounded like it's an interesting model. Trying to think. I'll message you. I'll find the guy's name and I'll message you the details, because it could be something to look into if that's what
and then students get to work on something that is an actual first entry on their resume, and they get professional contacts, because it's not like like this film, for example. It wasn't the crew wasn't populated by students. I mean, they were populated by paid professionals, but the students were then partnered up with them, so they assisted those professionals. So they now have these professional contacts. I think it's. I mean, if I were a student in a film program, I'd love to work on an actual set.
Oh yeah, that would be the dream.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd like to keep this going. So, but we'll see. I mean, you need a measure of success in order to keep this going. You know what I mean? Mm. But yeah. I'd love to hear how this other professor is doing it.
No, I'll definitely send you those details, man. Because I think this kind of thing is fascinating. So but no, like what you've done with the manifestation is great. I really enjoyed it. I thought it worked. So. Okay. Oh, congratulations, man. I really hope that Tuesday is you just get. Just all that thoughtful interaction, from everyone that's seen that film.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate your interest and this chat. It's very interesting and inspiring and I hope that this film will engender discussion amongst people who see it. I'd love to you know, be a fly on the wall and hear some of these discussions, what they think Veronica is, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, indeed. Now, how can people, you know, keep track of everything you're doing? How can they follow you, man?
Well, we have an Instagram site, you know, the Manifestation, film. So we have some, updates, on there, and, I don't, at the moment, I don't have a website, for the film, but, you know, when there is a project that I'm doing, you know, that goes online, like that children's series that I mentioned, that's like, there's a website for that. There's because, a friend of mine who's an illustrator, he looked at the screenplay, Jonathan Larrivé, he's also the comic book artist who made Zombie Wife on Webtoons. And he looked at that screenplay and said, hey, man, you should make this into a graphic novel. So then he went ahead and made it into a graphic novel, you know. So it is actually a graphic novel, which, you know, it's almost like a film on paper right now, you know, because he also, it is almost like... you know, this he kind of storyboarded the whole script, and that's now on undergroundscomic.com. So that's one project. I have web presences for these individual projects. So that's how people can follow me. And then obviously my my email address at the university, people can email me and reach out, and I'll let you know what I'm working on. But yeah, that's I try to stay away from having my own Instagram account or my own like the thing that I have to update, because I found in the past that this takes up too much creative energy, like trying to keep, you know, that going, and like too much, there's too much reaction on my end, and not enough. I don't have enough time for creative thinking and developing new projects. So I've taken a step back from social media in that sense. I'm not on Twitter. You can't follow me there or anything. But I'm trying to pour that energy into just creating stuff, like writing more. And then once there's a project, then it, you know, I'll go ahead with it. It'll be online.
Well, I don't think people are going to be too mad that you're going to be writing more. You know what I mean? So that's a good thing, man. That's a good thing.
Thank you. So
no worries at all. And with the graphic novel, that's like, you know, that must, I imagine that will be very helpful with funding, because it's proof of, you know, it's proof of purpose, right?
People. Yeah. No, totally. I mean, you can see that the thing works. I mean, the reviews have all been very good, you know, like from Kirkus Reviews and from, what was it? Book Life, Publishers Weekly. So, you know, I can, If someone would want to make this into an animated series, for example, or an animated film, I think live action would be quite expensive, more expensive. Mm-hmm. But I'd be open to it, obviously. There is now this whole like storyboard, so to speak, you know, like this graphic novel that shows you what it could look like. I was very excited that my friend made that, and I think at some point in the future, I don't know when, that's going to go. So, but at the moment, it's a graphic novel. Yeah. So right. Called the Undergrounds. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'll have to check that out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it out and, let me know what you think. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, People mark it down. The 19th of March is when the Manifestation drops. Make sure you know what I mean? You go check that out, follow it. Okay. And we'll keep track of Gert Bridge, because I feel we're going to be seeing a lot more of you in the future, my friend.
Thank you, Kevin. Really appreciated this conversation.
Hey, no worries, man. I'm yeah, very thankful you gave me your time, man. I've really enjoyed this. So, yeah, thank you. And all the success, man. All the success.
Okay. Hey, see ya.
All right. Take it easy, man. Bye. How fascinating, right? Man, that was really friggin' interesting. Well, God, I have to say, you know what I mean? It's very, my words, man. It is just very introspective, you know what I mean? Like, and I think the concept of being open to other people's ideas is something everyone should take on board. Like, we don't know everything, you know what I mean? So that was great. Who knew we were going to get into AI and music and, yeah, really great conversation. Man, it's ones like that you feel, oh, man, we could just keep on talking. Keep on talking. So, yeah, people, go check out The Manifestation. It opens tomorrow, the 19th of March. You'll be able to find it on all VODs, right? And then keep an eye and see what he has coming in the future. Because there's some interesting projects there. All right, people. Hope you enjoyed. And we will see you later in the week for more Echo Chamber. Peace.